How long you want to run?
As long as we have to, because right now we're broadcasting with the Banff podcast. Okay. My name is Walt, and I have the keys to the kingdom today, as Mike Lafferty had emergency caffeine inductions that were needed to keep him going for the day. Today we're here with Jason Nelson of Legendary Games, who we've had your crew on before talking about some pretty cool card games and stuff like that that you guys were producing. Mm-hmm. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. Well, how about you, man?
Living La Vida. Oh no, there was about just swearing. That was about to come out in Spanish. We can't do that. and as we were talking earlier, you have a co-star in there, Atlas, your new dog. How's he doing?
He might poke his head up here from time to time, but yeah,
yes!
He's a puppy. He's less than a year old, and he likes to put his nose into everything. So he might poke up from time to time. Hold on a second.
We do not disturb. There he is.
Yeah, my man. We do not discourage dog poking as long as the dog's doing the poking and not the other way around, because that gets weird. So today we are talking Mythos Monsters. Mm-hmm. So what sparked this project? Like, how did this get going?
Well, it kind of came from a couple of different directions. One, you know, Lovecraftian Call of Cthulhu stuff has been, you know, a bit of an evergreen thing in gaming. I mean, Call of Cthulhu is back to the late 70s, so it's almost as old as D&D is. And even from the earliest days of D&D, you've had mythos-ish kind of elements weaved into it, even before, you know, Deities and Demigods came out in, 1980 or so. And so it's always kind of been there. So it's a root that you can tap, at least from time to time. So it's something that we've revisited, you know, in other books before, on the, like, in Pathfinder or with our Fates of Madness card game. And so we had kind of played around with it for a while, but then we thought, what about making a bestiary book of just Mythos monsters? Because there's nothing you need more than cool new monsters in running a game, because you always got those darn players who memorize everything. So it's fun to have lots of different variants of things. Now, of course, Sandy Peterson, who is deeply connected and invested in the whole Call of Cthulhu side, made their great Lovecraft bestiary, what was that, a year or two ago? I forget exactly when it came out. So, you know, their book is fantastic. We're not trying to say, oh, this is better. It's just another book of cool monsters. Right. And that was part of the part of it was this. We were interested. Horror stuff is often, you know, something that's appealing. Monsters are always handy and a good thing to be able to have around. We had been building up a bit of a library of Mythos monsters in various products we've done over the years, a few here, a few there. Both things that are actually from the writings of H.P. Lovecraft and August Derleth and some of their imitators, but also things kind of from gaming history that are Lovecraft-like or Lovecraft-inspired, or, you know, in the same sort of flavor and zone, like the Nave Falgu Brain Collector. Not technically a Mythos monster, but definitely kind of coming down the same street. And so that was sort of the creative genesis of it, is, well, let's kind of patch together things that we've created, plus new stuff we're making, and make a cool monster book. That was part one. Part two was how to present it to the buying public. And Russ Morrissey over at EN World has been running a series of what he calls quick starters for the last couple of, maybe 6 months or so. And they are exactly what it says on the tin. It's a crowdfunding project, but instead of being some giant grandiose project or so, like, say, a few years ago, we did the Forest Kingdom Campaign Compendium. And in fact, we did it not just for D&D 5e, but also for Pathfinder at the same time as part of the same project. So this is like 800 pages worth of book put together here.
That's like a doorstop. Those things are huge.
And these are by no means the biggest books that we've created. And and so I kind of was observing that with interest. And to take a little side tangent, I am in one of my past lives, I am a PhD in education policy. I wrote a dissertation that's 273 pages long. I think it's great writing. Most people would probably find it dry as dust, but it was a very cool project that took a great deal of work to build up to it. And I think sometimes when we think crowdfunding, we think of dissertations, that it's got to be this huge, grandiose project with hundreds or thousands of pages and all these titanic stretch goals and all of this and all of that. And absolutely, there is a place for that, and we certainly have done and will continue to do those. But Russ's experiment was, what about something smaller, more focused? That is a very tangible and approachable project, a very time-limited one, because in any Kickstarter, you've got sort of a burst at the beginning and a burst at the end. It's sort of a time of letting the grass grow in the middle. And so if you've always got that grass growing time in the middle, what about the idea of compressing the length so there's less grass growing and more beginning and end? So, excuse me. So trying to make a Kickstarter more time efficient within the Kickstarter, but also having a project say, look, this project's done. It's ready to go. When the Kickstarter ends, boom, I will send the files out. Not, it's almost done. Not, oh, except for this. Not, oh, one more thing. Hey, not, you know, no. Here it is. It's ready. It's done. Kickstarter's over. Boom, here's your PDFs. Whenever we get everybody's information, and we'll start getting the books printed and shipped. And so it's very easy in the Kickstarter world, because you're often thinking in terms of these great dissertation level giant book kind of projects, to make it this big time scope and time span. And people sometimes talk about Kickstarter fatigue, the idea of, oh, there's too many projects out there. Well, that's true, but there also are literally millions of gamers out there. So even if, you know, the most successful Kickstarters are only getting, you know, thousands of gamers, you know, that those are for the ones that are, you know, bonanza successes. If you're doing a small and focused project, you don't necessarily need to worry about getting a million customers to come in. You can have it very focused, very ready. You can make it at an easy, digestible, and approachable price point where people can say, you know what, that sounds cool. And you can immediately turn it around. You're immediately in terms of PDF, obviously printing and shipping takes the amount of time that it takes. And especially this last year or so has been a freaking nightmare for publishers and everybody else when it comes to shipping, not just the US Postal Service, Amazon, UPS. A lot of the shipping services have become less reliable than they used to be. I mean, this past year, I've had probably more dropped, returned, disappeared, missing, lost, destroyed packages as I had in the 3 or 4 years combined leading up to it. But be that as it may, that's just kind of the logistical realities of the world. But I think people are less likely to be fatigued if they have much more instant gratification. They say, okay, here's something I can pledge into for $10, not 50. Here's something that I'm going to get immediately and not 6 months from now or a year from now or 2 years from now or whatever it may be. So I think it makes it a much more approachable and digestible project. And on the publisher side, something you can do with more frequency, because you've got discrete and manageable projects which you could begin, run, and complete. And then the next month or two, begin, you know, run and complete. And Russ has run, I don't know, maybe half a dozen or so of them. And I kind of watched them, and it's like, you're not going to be making, you know, $100,000 or $1 million in these projects. But if you want to use a baseball analogy, it's great to hit home runs, but, you know, you can make a lot of hay hitting singles and taking your walks and stealing the bases. And so as part of a company's ecosystem of what they do, at least certainly this is the first time we've tried, it certainly seems like a healthy part of a company's ecosystem to be able to do and present projects, especially projects that are kind of in between in size. Right. And I've been talking for a minute. I can go into more detail if you like, but there's a lot of publisher sausage. So let me pause for a moment, take a breath, and thoughts or questions or comments.
Well, going back to the lost package thing, I can definitely see like a Hound and Tadalos or possibly Amigo stealing your packages off your doorstep. But if you go to the actual Kickstarter link, you get a sampling of some of the monsters that we see in this campaign. And first of all, the art is glorious.
Thank you.
Just very well done. Nice painted style. Mm-hmm. And the layout is nice and clean. So often you get layout that is just, you know, it's all over the page and you don't know what to make of it. So, but that's cool. Like I said, this artwork is just absolutely fantastic. But in addition to that, going back to what you said about the price points, if you look here, $10 is a buy-in for a PDF with this quality of art and layout. is just fantastic. And then, you know, very manageable beyond that. The high end that you have, that $35 price point, mm-hmm. Contains the print version, but also has that card game to go with it. I mean,
yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that was the card game we talked about before. And it's something that it was popular and, you know, people liked it. But most of our sales on that were something we did at conventions and stuff. And so obviously that's a little harder to do when the world is closed down. So we figured, you know what, thematically, it's a great fit for this project. And, you know, that, excuse me. And also it's a great opportunity to say, here, if you like this, you'll probably like that. And here's the way they put it together. And this is kind of a hope for project. So when we do get together with our friends again, you'll have a fun quick play game that you can run with them as well. And we put in some links, I think, I don't know if I have it there. We do have some gameplay links for that card game, which I should probably dig up and maybe post up as next time I do a Kickstarter update, just so kind of people can kind of see, both to remember, hey, that's what it was like to go to conventions and have fun, but also just to see somebody playing through the card game in case they're curious and wonder, hey, I wonder what is that thing all about? But yeah, again, that's part of that whole idea of keeping it focused, keeping it simple, keeping it direct. Here's what it is. Get it. Awesome. Go.
Yep. Right here, brother. Right here. Look at the screen. Oh, my goodness.
There you go. Right, right?
I already had my copy when you guys ran the first one. Mm-hmm. I have to say the $500 initial funding goal mm-hmm. is a great idea. Because like you were saying earlier, you know, it gives people that sense that maybe they have already thing already complete and they just need a little extra cheddar for this thing, you know, yeah. which is.
Yeah. So what are we at? We are currently at 3,242% funded. So
that'll do it.
Which, you know, what is the funding goal for a project like this? I mean, it's hard to say exactly how you want to do it because this is an experimental thing. And for all we knew, we would have gotten, you know, 200 backers and made a couple thousand dollars. Said, you know what? If that had been what it was, I said, you know what? That would still have been a success.
Right. Because
it would just be an easy way to get the book done, get it out to people. If there wasn't a great appetite for it, okay, cool. As it is, we're probably tracking towards somewhere around 800 or between 800 and maybe even 1,000 print copies needed just for the Kickstarter fulfillment. And so at that number, you know, we say, okay, if we're printing that many, we're not going to want to do it as a print-on-demand thing. We'll do an actual print run of them and get them, you know, shipped here so we can then ship them out because, you know, you can get them printed then for about a third of the cost to do them as print-on-demands and probably a little bit better quality as well. Print-on-demand has gotten a lot better than it used to be, and it's definitely very solid, but the print runs that we've done, I think, are better. And so if we get that, it'll take a little bit longer because, you know, there's logistics involved actually getting the book then from the printer to us. But if that's what the appetite is, then awesome. And right, so it allows you to sort of play both sides because Kickstarter back in the olden days was seen as more of, I think, kind of a, I'll call it a startup or venture capital kind of a idea. I have an idea. Do you want to fund it? Okay, great. There's enough appetite. Now I'll go make it. And I think that was how Kickstarter philosophically a lot of people approached it, you know, 5 years ago. Nowadays it's much more, here's a project that I'm already making, or even I already have made, or is on the cusp of being done. And here's what I want to both market and see what the appetite for it is, but then also be ready to give it to you immediately, doing a lot more of the upfront work. Well, literally up front. And so at the beginning, we probably plan for, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll probably do it just as PDF and a print on demand. But then we include in there, if this response is spectacular, we'll do a full print run and we'll just kind of let it see how it goes. And
right on.
I haven't checked with Morris's Quickstarters to see exactly what the different content was of his different ones to see what was the... How different was the response to different subject matter? He's done some that are kind of magic item focused, some that are more on characters stuff. There was one that was sort of holiday themed, I think. And so you can also, if you're doing these smaller focused projects, you can keep them much more self-contained. And some of them maybe more popular, some maybe less. This is the Lovecraft mythos kind of stuff. And as I said earlier, that's been part of the DNA of the game since, you know, almost the beginning. And usually an easy sell for folks. If we produce something for 5e that was maybe, say, more like a sci-fi stuff, that's often a harder sell to 5e fans. But if there are enough of them, say, yeah, you know what, that still sounds cool. But it allows you to explore different areas in discrete ways without shackling yourself to a, you know, a two-year project.
Yeah.
To get it all done.
Now, is there any kind of special mechanics that you have to deal with dealing with Cthulhuoid monsters, especially since in so much of the literature, there's this big focus on the awe-inspiring nature of them and the fact that, you know, you can literally go insane from dealing with some of these things. Does any of that go into the mechanics?
I would say yes and no. Yes, in that we do put a super, super digested, you know, sidebar basically about madness and insanity in this monster book. There are some pretty basic sanity and insanity rules in the D&D 5e DM's guide. So you can certainly use those. We have produced multiple different books with various means of dealing with madness mechanic. And it kind of strikes me that I wonder why I didn't put one of those in there as an add-on. Maybe I will go ahead and add that in. We have an entire book called The Tome of Madness. It's like about 32-page or so PDF or soft cover that just deals with a very robust system of, you know, dealing with, you know, insanity and various effects in a way that doesn't necessarily make your character unplayable, which is one of the tricks of, oh, my character's insane. It either, you know, on the one hand, does nothing or just makes you a complete wreck. And it's like, wait, why even bother? So it's built in a way to allow sort of, you know, incorporating 20, 30 or so different types of insanity into the game. And designed by somebody who actually is a mental health professional in their, you know, day job. But that's something I should, now that we talk about it, I don't think I'm going to go into the Kickstarter later and add in as an extra add-on. Because I mean, we've already got some extra adventures in there that you can do as an add-on pledge if you want to say, I want to throw some Cthulhu stuff into my campaign. But, you know, gives you some ready-made adventures. You can get them either in PDF or in print. So I think I'll go ahead and add the Tome of Madness to that pile as well as an extra add-on. But we've done a number of different ones. We've done some supplements that are focused on sort of, you know, Necronomicon style, you know, creepy, evil, madness-inducing spell books where the spells themselves are embedded with the power of the mythos, and learning them or casting them can make you even more crazy. And so we have over the years published different iterations of sanity and insanity type effects. So in this book here, there's a light touch of that because this is first and foremost a monster book.
Right.
And so we want to keep the focus. It's a monster book, and that's what it is. If you want to learn more about madness, here are some other books too that you can, you know, delve more deeply into. We are thinking about publishing we are planning on publishing a, you know, horror adventures, an ultimate horror is the current working title, of a 5e, you know, compilation of all kinds of awesome horror content. And that's something which we will probably be doing as a larger Kickstarter sometime later this year, maybe in the summer, possibly in the fall. We'll kind of see how everything else shakes up scheduling wise. We have a bigger Kickstarter coming up soon called Ultimate Treasure. So all about magic items, but that's our next big project. And those who are interested in magic items can also check out our legendary Loot Patreon, which I think I sent you the link to, with every single day, brand new magic items, monsters, spells, new 5e content, literally every day. You log in now for sort of $3 and you can get over 100 magic items, monsters, spells, and other little rulesy bits. And we did actually touch on madness, I think, last week in one of our postings. But anyway, so there's different ways to kind of cover it. But in that horror book, we'll probably have a more robust treatment of madness in the game. But yeah, if you want, you know, an easy supplement to be able to incorporate in a fairly rich way that gives you much more depth than the DMG version does, then Tome of Madness will be the way to go. And that's what you can get on the Legendary Games website, of course, anytime, or DriveThruRPG. MakeYourGameLegendary.com is our website. Any place you're going to buy in, you know, your PDFs or your soft covers, I guess on sale on Amazon. But anyway, Point being, yeah, Madness is an interesting thing because there's lots of different ways to come at it. But I think that the most useful way is to do it in a way that gives some interesting quirks and challenges, but doesn't totally just freaking suicide your character from being able to do anything.
Yeah, and that's the toughest part too. Like, how far do you take that? Because, you know, throwing insanities into a game is kind of like hitting a character with a hammer.
Right.
You know, they can recover, but there's going to be a bruise and most likely a scar. And, yeah, you know, it's going to follow that character because whether it's a psychosis or some sort of a phobia or what have you, that, you know, mm-hmm. people are going to start like, hey, you know, Ragnar the Barbarian is having a rough day again. Can somebody get him his magic potion?
Mm-hmm. You don't want to make it so easy to fix that it's pointless, but you don't want to make it so hard to fix that it's impossible. And it, you know, a lot of game design is about threading the needle. And a lot of it is also about just knowing what's fun for you and your players. And it's like, you know, take the, you know, critical hit cards or critical fumbles. Some people love them. Some people are like, that's insane. I would never do that. Yeah. And, or some of you are like, oh, maybe a little bit here and there. And so maybe that's, well, not maybe definitely, that is one of the reasons why we publish kind of multiple different approaches to it. Because each player, each GM, each group kind of has their own level. And you got to calibrate how you play the game to what's fun for you and your crew. And that may not be as fun, you know, for the group that plays across the street as it does for you. And so you got to kind of try things out and find your level of what you enjoy. But, you know, We do design ourselves to be all always approachable and, you know, easy to engage with and use, so that, yeah, you can tailor the effects of it, but that any one of them would be, you know, relatively easy to implement into your ongoing campaign.
Now, do you have to do anything to any of the monster archetypes? Because there's a lot of lore about this stuff all over the place. I mean, and we've seen really big game companies come in and give these things the treatment. Now, you know, yourself included, do you have to do anything to kind of tailor these to a medieval tone or like a fantasy game tone versus setting this in like the 20s or in space or cyberpunk?
I would say that is probably, you know, the biggest thematic difference between, you know, our little softcover book and Sandy Peterson's Cthulhu Mythos is that, you know, he's coming directly from the Call of Cthulhu mindset and style and idiom and shtick, whatever you want to call it, that feel of what the Cthulhu things are about. They're D&D stats, but they're coming from a Call of Cthulhu approach, whereas our Versus the Monsters are much more coming from a medieval fantasy, you know, and, you know, high magic fantasy sort of approach. And so they, you know, where they get to at the end, it's still a usual D&D monster. It's just a different idea of why does this monster exist and what is their thing they do that makes them cool. So I don't know if there's any special trick to that other than just having played a lot and designed a lot. I've been playing D&D for, actually, this March will be my 41st anniversary of my first D&D game. So I've been playing a long time through a lot of editions and have, you know, written for a lot of editions, and my team is, you know, very engaged in all kinds of stuff. So it's a matter of kind of finding the feel of it. So these, look, there's a certain level at which if you file the serial numbers off, you know, a monster is a monster. Right. But building the lore into them, and the lore is it's tailored for, like I said, a much more a medieval and a magical kind of a setting. It's not, you know, if you're playing in the 1920s, you know, a freaking zombie, you know, with nothing else added to it, is the scariest thing you're going to fight. It's like, what, the Walking Dead? Oh, my God. whereas in a D&D style world, it's like, oh, yeah, zombie, whatever, stab.
Yeah.
And so you have to take a little different approach. I think that's why, even as far back as like Ravenloft, things like, you know, fear and terror and horror rules were implemented, try and put something in the system of the game to make the characters feel the effect of strangeness and terror and horror in a way that the players probably wouldn't. Like, oh no, it's a zombie, it's a amigo, whatever that is, okay, stab. You know, they're not necessarily any more inherently afraid of it than they are of an owlbear or a gelatinous cube. because all of them are strange, outlandish monsters. But you want to build something into the monster that makes the characters feel the effect of their strangeness and their horror and their awfulness. Now, of course, you can also mess with players' minds at the table by surprising them with monsters being able to do stuff like, whoa, hey, time out, how to do that?
Yeah.
And so there is some of that built into how these monsters are created. Some unexpected abilities in some places. They are also complex abilities. 5e definitely leaned in the rules of light kind of a way, but I think that doesn't necessarily always best serve something like a mythos flavored monster. I think that having some more texture and nuance to what it can do and lingering effects and how things combine together, I think helps add to the strangeness and the, whoa, hey, that was not just a regular, you know, punch me in the face monster. That was something else. So I think that's the philosophy, is to give it some more and more different things to do. And especially in the context of, like I said, in 5e, of pushing it over a little bit into some stuff that a typical 5e monster would not do.
Right on. I can recall a game that we had where we put in a type of carnivorous plant.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, guys had been hit by it, you know, because it was able to move and so forth and so on. And then later on, one of their retainers started coughing and stuff like that. And, you know, then, you know, bleeding from the mouth. And, mm-hmm. you know, when they, you know, when he started going into convulsions, you know, the healers were trying to figure out what was going on and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, you know, when plants started coming out of the armor and ripping them to shreds and reaching for the guys and animating them as like a type of zombie, mm-hmm. they were freaked out at the table. Mm-hmm. And I had one guy that said, "Hey dude, too much." Too much. And I'm like, why was that too much? He goes, because the description was good. And I said, you know, I can't take full credit for the monster because the monster is kind of like a mismatch of, you know, a couple of different horror movies, you know, but a great description at the table and just the right atmosphere set by the right DM can really go a long way. But the thing that a book like this really does is it helps envision, or helps a GM envision what kind of things would mess with a player's brain mm-hmm. while they're at the table. Like, I don't know about you, but some of the players that I sit down at the table at, this would freak them out. Mm-hmm. Seeing all those tentacles come out, especially if it was, you know, just a person with a mask and it's like, you know, oh, this allure of whatever. And then all of a sudden, you know, as they start moving tentacles, Yep, you have robe vomit at the bottom, and then suddenly mm-hmm. there, you know, there emits this thing, and you know, you got people freaking out. This kind of nightmare fuel is like really great fun at the table. Mm-hmm. Now the question is there, you know, as a resource for the GM, the you know, monster resources like monster manuals and stuff like that are fantastic things for the GM. Are there any sections for a player in this?
This is all GM focused. It's, you know, and it's GM focused for all ranges of campaigns. We've got stuff down to, you know, low grade, you know, minions that you could throw at, you know, a first or second level party, all the way up to ridiculous, absurd, you know, challenge rating up in the high 20s or 30 or somewhere up insane like that, that, you know, maybe they could challenge at the very end of an epic style campaign. And only then just to temporarily save the world from the grip of apocalypse and cause it to recede just long enough to take a breath and say, we won for now.
Nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
That's right. One thing we did also include is what we call the Xenoid Monster Template, which is kind of pulling from the third edition D&D idea of, you know, of creature templates, but, you know, translated in a 5e sort of a way of a method for, you know, turning pretty much any monster into a horrifying, you know, pseudo-natural alien tentacle monster from beyond, with a whole set of abilities, and also actually two versions of it, one for kind of a basic and one for making a more like a legendary version of the creature. So if you are talking about that alien influence into the world, one of the ways is not just brand new monsters, but it's also seeing things that are familiar and yet distorted. So okay, you're fighting an owlbear, but all of a sudden, when you stab the owlbear in the chest, boom, it's, your head opens up like a gug, and tentacles come out of it and start, you know, and you're like, whoa, hey, no, wrong, bad. And so being able to play around with existing creatures in a way that helps you add some gasoline to the horror fight.
Yes, that is the way to do it. I love gasoline on the horror fire.
I know it doesn't. So yeah, the idea is to make this usable at all levels for GMs to be able to drop stuff in fairly easily. You've got lore and descriptions, and again, the lore and description stuff that we use won't necessarily match the ones that, you know, Sandy Peterson's book would use, or that other books involving, you know, mythos kind of things use. And then again, that's fine, because these are alien creatures from beyond. There can be an infinite variety of them. Just because we have a Shoggoth, and the Tome of Beasts has a Shoggoth, and Sandy Peterson's got a Shoggoth, and I think there may be an official D&D 5e Shoggoth. I can't remember the one from the Monster Manual or not. But point being, wait, I can look it up. I've got one right here.
Now, the one thing that everybody expects to see when you start hitting the Cthulhu button, yeah. You know, other than crazy monsters that push the brain pan, yeah. Is cultists. Yeah. Do you have cultists in here?
To an extent. There are Deep One hybrids.
Oh, right on.
So
yep.
You could, there are specific stats for Deep One hybrids, which you can use as cultists. But again, there are not player and GM basic rules for, like, you know, new spells and new alien rituals and, you know, sample stat blocks for, you know, cult leaders and cult minions. This is focused on monsters. And, you know, people have asked us about a couple of specific, you know, mythos monsters in the comments and stuff on the Kickstarter. And you know, is this particular one going to be in there? Is that particular one going to be in there? And in some cases, the answer is yes. The answer is no. And this project does not have any stretch goals. We're not adding stuff to the book. The book is what it is. It's done. You know, we may add a page of Kickstarter backers. We may not. Right now, the book is kind of tight in space. I'll have to look and see if there's room for that. Right. But we're not trying to make this into a sprawling project. The entire point of it is to be begin, middle, and here you go. And so we're not trying to expand the scope, because the controlled scope is part of the point of the project. But that doesn't mean we might not add more stuff later. We may do another book later. And as I said, we'll be looking at doing this ultimate horror book later in the year. And some stuff that was not in this book, but the people asked about, we may say, you know what, that might be something useful to add to that book down the road. This one here is kind of the example of it. You know, it says what it is, and it is what it says. You know, it's a book of mythos monsters, period, end of sentence.
Nice.
And so there's a million other things we could have included in here. This is what this book is. There are many other books to come, but this is what this is what we got.
Can we get some preview on the you know, the ultimate horror book?
The ultimate horror book will probably be somewhere in the, you know, somewhere in the kind of the 300 to 400-ish page range. So much like the Forest Kingdom campaign compendium or the Pirate campaign compendium we did was very popular. We actually sold out of our entire print run of that. That one was a little bigger. That was 448 pages.
Dear Lord Almighty.
That was the 5e version. The Pathfinder version was 502 pages. So that book, the Ultimate Horror book, it will have more horror-themed character options. It'll have spells, it'll have magic items. It will compile all of those creepy magic spellbook kind of things that we talked about from before, those sort of, you know, Necronomicon-like kind of things. Those will be in there. It'll have several adventures. It'll have some, you know, sample characters that you could, you know, easily use or drop in, or be, you know, NPCs you encounter or rival adventuring party. And it will address more specifically rules like sanity and insanity, creepy kind of constructs, you know, mad scientists, you know, corrupt medicine, you know, experimentation, you know, medieval punk, you know, proto-cybernetics. So you've got those kind of horror things where someone's been captured by the scientists and turned into a god-awful cyborg monster. And how to manage those kind of things in-game. So it'll kind of cover all that sort of stuff that you would want to see if you want to run a campaign that's either all horror, like a Ravenloft style campaign, or that is just, you know, a visit to Horrorland here and there.
Right on. Jacob in the chat wants to know, is the pirate book available on print on demand?
I believe that it is. The Pathfinder book definitely is. And I think that we did finally get the 5e book up in print on demand. It took a little while because our layout person for that kind of was off for a while. But gotcha. Let me go and look it up. I can actually answer that question for sure.
And while you're doing that, we had not too long ago, we had a game where one of the great things about horror is you can take stuff that is very familiar and mess with it.
Yes.
And the players in my test group were hired to hunt down a werewolf. Sure. So they loaded up with silver. They had all sorts of magic ready to go. And everything was, you know, everything was on the hunt. And they go through this town and there are several murders that occur where, you know, people are eaten and just violently savage. Right. Like they are. And then it turns out it wasn't a werewolf at all. It was one of the local shopkeepers who is this skinny waif of a woman who was using the guise of a, she was wearing a bear pelt to,
okay,
to murder people she felt was responsible for the death of her husband.
Okay.
So, but there were, you know, there were other monsters involved and blah, blah, blah. And she had found a way to lure things into that the players could actually fight. And then there was that investigative angle of when was the werewolf going to hit? Cause it wasn't exactly behaving like a werewolf and they just felt right. I wasn't obeying the rules and you're being a dick. So
they always think that.
So, but yeah, when they found out what was going on, they were like, dude, that was, oh my God. And I said, you know, once again, I usually don't have time to make up original ideas for adventure. So I steal right. shamelessly from books, movies, you know, and just put them in there. Cause with like you were saying, this is your 41st year of D&D. There's so much out there that you can actually play with and allow to inform your campaign to where if you need something, you can usually go grab it.
That's why I don't buy very much gaming stuff anymore. Because anytime I think about buying something, I look at my shelves and I'm like, really?
Those are some long looking shelves you got there.
Yeah. Now, most of those are actually my comic book collection. I have 99 of these boxes here. At my wife's insistence, I actually organized the comics last year on one of those pandemic projects. Things have been sitting in these boxes and stuff that I actually went through, got them all organized, got them all boxed up in groups. So you can see it. And it looks all very nice and stuff. So it's all very neat. If I want to go and look something up, I can just kind of go to the box in there, slip that one box out, not cock up the whole rest of everything.
Right.
But having that, you know, deep well of stuff out there also means there are lots of ideas that have been redone in later editions, but there's also lots of ideas that haven't. And every now and then I'll kind of reach into the Wayback Machine and find something and say, you know what, I think this is something that I would be fun to play around with. And in answer to your question about the pirate book, yes, it is available in print on demand. You can get it in print on demand at DriveThruRPG or at our website on makeyourgamelegendary.com. If you want, I can copy the links into our chat and you can share them out in the comments.
Hell yeah. Yeah. We can post them on the, we can put them on the page on the post show. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you put those up there, I'll shamelessly steal them, and then
I'm all for shameless stealing.
Right on. So one of the great, like we were saying earlier, one of the great things with this is that you have you had such an attainable goal, which you have smashed through with a ball peen hammer. The add-ons are also very easily grabbed and easily attainable, especially in PDF and stuff like that. If you haven't tried the card game is an interesting night of fun. So I have it. It's a quick thing while you're, you know, waiting for dinner or you're having friends over. We haven't figured out how to play it online yet. So,
yeah, that's something we kind of thought about, you know, but I haven't really come. There's a way to do cards in Roll 20, but it's not really for something like this. It doesn't really seem to work. So if anybody's got a great idea for how to operationalize a card game online, we're all ears. But for right now, it's like, well, you know what? Hang on to it and think. And then one of these days we will get to play in person again. So
Right on. So if as we begin to wind things down, put our sword in our scabbard and go to our favorite priest for a spell that will hopefully heal the madness that comes from reading this book, what are some things that people really should know before they jump into this? Or is it just it's good, clean fun that will, you know, give you nightmares and you need to buy it immediately?
You know, it's exactly all of that and more. Really, that's the beauty of it, is that a quick starter like this, this project's going to be over on the 20th. So next week, next Wednesday, project will be done. When it's done, it will, you know, close the books. We'll send out the links to everybody who's plugged in for PDF. For print, we'll either start the printing process soon. Usually it takes about a week or so for all the funds and stuff to confirm through Kickstarter. The response, as I said, it's been sufficiently great that barring some shocking downturn in the end of the project, I'm pretty sure we will be doing a full-size print run. So it'll take a little bit to get the books, you know, printed and shipped to here. Once they get here, we'll be shipping them on out. So the print will kind of take a few months to get to you. But, you know, that's life. But the PDFs will go out immediately, and that includes for any add-on that you're getting. Add-ons will go out immediately. I will be adding the Tome of Madness as an add-on, because in our conversation, now I'm thinking about it, why did I put it up there to begin with? I don't know, but it's going up there now. So even if you've already pledged, there will be a new add-on thing which you'll be able to get, you know, at a discount from the regular price. It's something that already exists on our web store. You could buy it now. But if you're already a Kickstarter backer, you can get a little savings. So
there you go.
Far be it for me to get in the way of you and a good time. but look for Ultimate Treasures will be coming out probably in another month or two. That'll be our next big Kickstarter project. And it's going to be a big book, probably around 300 pages or so, somewhere in the order of 700 to 800 magic items, technological items, new equipment and stuff, all for D&D 5e. You can also go, as I said, to our Legendary Loot Patreon. And we started a few months ago. We said you can get pledge on for a total of $3 a month. So new content every single day. New magic items, new monsters, new spells, new bonus stuff beyond that kind of time. And there's also, we're doing magic item cards for it, which are in process now. And there's a monthly compilation we do called The Dragon's Horde that has all of the stuff there put out in PDF. Also available to print, full color, wonderful, and you can get those every month of all the content from the previous month. So there's all kinds of great stuff going on, and that's just on our 5e side. And Ultimate Horror coming later this year. If you're into other games like Pathfinder, Starfinder, Savage Worlds, Pathfinder 2nd Edition, we do tons of other RPG stuff as well. So please do check us out at makeyourgamelegendary.com.
Hell yeah. And that's how you end a show. Hey, thanks for coming on today, Jason. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. It's always a great time. I love, you know, hanging out and chatting with you, and I hope Mike's caffeination gets better.
Yeah, he had to drink water this morning on our early show, and we felt bad. Yeah. We felt bad. When the next project drops, can we have you back to throw some love back to the ethosphere? Okay.
Absolutely. I would be glad to be on any old time. It's always great chatting with you, and just all the best to you and Will. Everybody out there, keep safe, love your loved ones, and, you know, keep gaming as best you can.
And make sure you put tentacles in everything until you buy this Kickstarter so that you can totally freak them out.
Also that.
Check our friends out at makeyourgamelegendary.com. You can join their campaign at this tiny little convenient link we quickly put together in 30 seconds as we were panicking. And don't forget, if you want to panic your players, pick up Mythos Monsters that are on Kickstarter today. Thanks for joining us in the BAMP podcast.